Yes, good morning. Good morning, dear listeners and listeners of Eagle FM Namibia. And welcome to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And let us thank Matthias Angala with the twilight. It's that time of the early morning that we discuss about issues of global affairs, issues of trade, economics, governance, and indeed everything which, affect our bread and butter. Yes, it's 4 minutes past the hour of six, and it's the 15th of October, 2025. We are half toward the end of the month, and also moving closer to the end of 2025. And wherever you are finding yourself, we are always indicating to you in the morning to say the fact that you are awake, the fact that you can listen to Eagle FM Namibia, it means that you must be grateful. It also means that you are one of those who are lucky to be awake, because somebody of your age, somebody who even had better health than you, is some of those people did not get an opportunity to be awake. And the fact that you can listen to Eagle FM Namibia, make sure that, this morning you can plan and also make the best out of it. And there is one thing I've learned, especially when it comes to, life. It's not only about those who think about what you are going to eat next Friday or what you are going to eat end of the month. It's about planning. And you can learn that from an animal called eagle. You can learn that from an animal called eagle, because what you need to understand is that when you, through my research, I was able to understand that an eagle is the only bird that can look straight into the sun without damaging its eyelid. And also, it's the only bird that can spot its prey more than 4 kilometers away. And by the time you are seeing it, it's already airborne, picked it up already. And that can tell you about long-term thinking. It can tell you about long-term thinking and also long-term strategic thinking. And in this morning, let us think beyond end of the year. Let us think beyond what we are going to eat and dress and dance in December, but let's think about 5 years at least. And also let's think about once you are not here, what is your legacy going to be? And also what are you going to leave for your kids, great kids? And also how are you going to be remembered in the history books? Because at the end of the day, it's not only about you, but it's also the impact that you have on people. Starting today, we are starting from home. Just before we go to what we have at home, we have to understand that when it's coming to our e-paper, the Villager newspaper, it's coming out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And today, like any other Wednesday, you must make sure that you get an opportunity to go through, read, and also capacitate yourself, because there is always a saying to say, there is no greater poverty than the poverty of mind. It's no greater poverty than the poverty of mind, because if we fail to improve our mind, if we fail not to feed our mind, it will drive us somewhere that we do not want. And let us not operate on autopilot. Let us operate on data. Let us operate on information, so that we can make those informed decisions. And I'm very happy, actually, particularly when you look at the views and opinions of ordinary Namibians, particularly about issues. And looking at some of these things, you may think is just information out there, but it's information that is shaped development. Look at what happened at the proposal of payroll deduction management system, where people understood that research and development is quite a very important thing, and the data showed that people are not very happy. However, the government also understood, and that is a direction that you want to say. When you make informed decision based on statistics, it's easy for you and also to understand what people want and also make those decisions. Starting at home, the Namibia head of state, that is President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, has expressed her concern about the situation in Madagascar, and also has urged SADC and AU to support, you know, mediation, particularly looking at chaotic activities or chaotic events which happen in Madagascar. And she indicated that when it comes to these regional bodies, the head of state and leaders must adhere to the commitment, must adhere to the commitment that made in August. And, you know, she also pointed out that the President André Rajoelina, who, you know, the outset president of Madagascar, was elected as the chairperson of SADC in August 2025. You know, she indicated that Madagascar hold a position of leadership and moral stewardship in the region, and SADC and AU must hold, you know, must help in assisting in mediation of the situation. Because when you look at the updates of what is happening, the president is out of the country. The military took over in Madagascar and dissolved all the institution of government. There is no constitutional order there. It's somebody who has an AK-47 assault rifle who is leading now in Madagascar. Somebody who is calling the shots. It's a military which took over and indicated that they are going to be in power for the next 2 years until the situation stabilizes. And until the situation stabilizes, there is no power of the constitution. There is no power of, you know, the judiciary. There is no electoral commission for now. There is no power of, you know, judges. And it's a military rule for the next 2 years until the situation stabilizes. And you're also asking questions, especially looking at the president, who the president of Madagascar, André Rajoelina, who came into power also almost the same situation in 2009, and somebody who left or who was airlifted to France went with, and he has instrument of power, actually, as an instrument of power of SADC, is an instrument of power. But what is very interesting, and what we are also seeing, especially about the structure of SADC, is that it was made to that extent that even if the chair is not there, it's not only one person who has power. That's why it's operational mechanism that is called Troika government, where you have various leaders holding key, you know, sectors within, you know, within within SADC region, where you have a chairperson of SADC. Then you also have the chairperson of organs of politics, defense, security, cooperation. You have an outgoing chair and also incoming chair. And in that sense, in that sector, it's also one of the things actually which have assisted the standing and maintenance of operation of SADC. But on top of that, you also have a statement from His Excellency Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika, who was recently elected in Malawi, and is currently a chairperson of SADC organs of politics, defense, and security. And that is a very critical position that is dealing with issues of security in the region of SADC. And he gave a statement. And also he indicated that you know, SADC deeply regret the loss of life, injuries, and destruction of properties in Madagascar. And SADC is also calling for exercise of maximum calm and restraint, respect the rule of law, upholding the constitution of governance, engaging in inclusive, constructive dialogue, and resolve, you know, differences peacefully. And on top of that, also indication, to say when it comes to that sector, those are communication from regional body. AU also gave a statement on that ground. But the question, that we are putting on the table here is that what really triggered situations like this? What triggered situations in Morocco, in Tunisia? What triggered this Arab Spring things? What triggered young people to be involved in conflict situation, in demonstrations? What triggered young people to be involved in, you know, to become part of child soldiers, to become, you know, active in this, you know, changes of government, which is undemocratic, which, you know, is very dangerous, actually, for the future. What caused this thing? What is the root cause of this? Maybe let us look at that sector to say, what is that, that institutional governance, what is that that African institutions are not doing to come to the point that young people can be influenced by anybody, anything which come out there? Is promise not fulfilled? Is it really the young people who are not patient enough? Or there is something that Africans, we must sit on the table and discuss about to say, when it comes to peace and security, when it's coming to young people and the leadership of, you know, African governance institution, is there something that is not done correctly? Is it really genuine to say the Generation Z in Madagascar does not like their president? Is it really that situation? Is it really to say these are just ungovernable young people who do not want peace or want things to come easy? So when we answer that question, when you answer that question to say a desperate young person may be a ticking bomb if the situation is not addressed, what is that that we need to do? So that, because remember, change of government has a negative impact not only in Madagascar but also in SADC region. Because when institution collapse, when institutional government collapse, when institutional government collapse, trade collapse, cooperation collapse, and it will take time to engage with a military leader, because for now the country is in chaos. Now, what lesson can we learn, and how do we deal with issues of youth, you know, professionally, correctly, so that they cannot be influenced by anything which can come? Because it's actually very dangerous to have young people who are, you know, frustrated, who are promises are not met, who also the future, there is no clear plan on their future. Look what happened in the during you know, chaotic activities which was happening in South Africa, especially during the arrest of Jacob Zuma. Then you are asking yourself to say, why this opportunist get time to incorporate young people in this violence, in this looting? And I have seen on the internet one very beautiful lady in Madagascar throwing stones to, you know, the security force, and somebody posted to say, this is somebody's wife in Madagascar, just to make a joke about it. But, you know, let's take the caller and see. Hello, good morning. Good morning. You can still call back. You can still call back and give your input. Good morning.
Sorry, maybe too early, but good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Mm.
Yeah, no, that question of yours is you require 100 million, what? Million answer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very diverse and also requires some, you know, multi-central kind of.
I just want a straight answer. I'm not asking a diplomatic question. It's a straight answer.
Yeah,
to
yes, if you just want a straight answer.
Yeah.
Without explaining and elaborating. Then.
Yeah.
So, but it's very interesting.
Yeah.
We are all praying that the situation become governable.
Mm.
Everybody, the interests of the youth and everybody.
Yeah.
If you are talking about Africa, the future of the world, for example.
Yeah.
Africa the future of the world in terms of the resources.
Yeah.
What can offer, Africa can offer,
yeah,
in terms of the potential, the energy, the youth that you're talking about, the resources that are there. Why can't we then, as young, I don't know the generation that you're talking in Madagascar, so there are also different eras, generation. But if that one now is has a different, and there are many, you even asked about the string, that thing that caused some years back, you know, this rebellious and all this conflict started actually, I think, somewhere in Arab country there.
Yeah.
And they went demonstrating and things like that. And apparently it's all in the name of democracy. It's true. It's good when we value and preserve those democratic principles, values, you know.
Yeah, my question is that are the young people of Madagascar really, you know, ungovernable?
So when you infrastructure, there are many people, you have heard of people who are, you know, treason against the government and things like that. Mm. Not that they don't like their people.
Yeah.
Of course, they are desperate. They are experiencing a problem of unemployment, problem of a lot of social problems. So even political issues might also be there.
Yeah.
Economic and issues, they are really burning. And, you know, the generation and the population. So you really need to then negotiate and understand the picture that if you now become ungovernable and destroy everything, will the future themselves really able to now sustain and provide for their livelihood?
Yeah.
Or you make the situation more worse because, one, people are dying.
Yeah.
And there will be no structure. There will be no governance structure. There will be no leadership. So this place here, it also requires like the way you are doing it. I wish you could be the one, you know, you have got also youth activists, youth mobilization and things like that.
Yeah.
And if you do not follow the structure that are established seriously to create, to really have some dialogue and conversation with the leadership. If we don't create that structure, that everybody can just go in the shop and negotiate and say, if you don't want to increase the thing, boom. Because I believe those structures that authorize bodies that are there, even in the community, traditional leaders, they will have structures to address problems of like this nature, isn't it?
Yeah.
But if we just then find, because I'm talking about this thing because I see the vacuum of leadership there in terms of the leading the youth and managing their emotion and everything, their interest.
Okay,
so if you now...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
so
continue.
We were asking... No, ask your question. Ask what you want to
know. I'm saying, is there something wrong with the system? Because when I look at it from this point, I don't think the president of Madagascar has much power. Because at the end of the day, you can be a very good politician with good intention, but when the system is crippling you, you may be looking like the bad one. Because you are also working with people.
Yes.
Yeah,
but
why, what is really wrong? Because somebody can campaign and say, I'm going to change your life in the next 3 years. But even after 3 years, there is one...
3 years is even little. 3 or 5 years that you're talking about is very little. You always put the president, I mean the leadership under pressure. Because for you to finish, even you finish your degree in 4 years.
Yeah.
5 years.
Yeah.
So then all these things. So let me just answer your question and finish up. What we are saying is that there are also distractors there. It's not that the president maybe is liked by some or few.
Yeah.
There are those who feel they are excluded and things like that. And there are also those who are influenced. There are also there are so many. It's so many. So we should not take it for granted and allow our people to be influenced anyhow. Like you are asking the question, if we do not have leadership like you, the way you are now, if many leaders are listening, I mean the young ones and things like that, And they are seeing some of those opportunities that are emerging, this economic opportunity.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to come together and mobilize yourself and help. Like I said, there are structures. If there are no structures, that's why sometimes you see all this. Even the system, I know is there. It's and, working.
And who created the system? Is it not our own system?
Ourselves. The system is for us. It's our system. That's why we bring this. So if we can just allow ourselves to really sometimes look at and promote the vision of the leaders. For the one, for the Madagascar and all these things.
Mm.
So they are really also vulnerable. And any country can be vulnerable through your own people, because there are a lot of things that are happening there. There are even countries who do not even want to, you see, the death penalty. People are still want to kill others. So if you now do something like that of your neighbor, then you allow those other countries to have their constitution of the promoting those principles, then how are you going to have the world governed? If it's not your own country. Because people, the rule of law is not there. So there's no regard of the rule of law. So then what? Then our youth, our children, who are not influenced, should then just go and suffer. So let's make sure that let's follow the structure. Sometimes to follow the structure, establish structure in advocating for programs, because otherwise things might turn very harsh, and then we're not able to look at it like that, you know. Then the war will start again.
Thank you.
So follow the structure, establish, make sure you dialogue, you negotiate for needs and concerns in the orderly manner.
Thank you.
The rule of law.
Thank you very much.
Cool.
Yes, Kobana is speaking about, let's negotiate. Let's find better ways of solving issues. Let us find better ways of solving issues. And looking at that context, you may agree with me. May agree with me to say, people. And maybe it's also something that we all need to think about, and also we need to change, especially from citizens, those who are in the middle class, the political elites, to think about what is a better system. How can we better improve the system that we are using to serve the people on the ground, and also to expand or grow the economy. And also to cut out some of this, high level of bureaucracy that will distract and also make a lot of people very tired, especially if you want one little service. How can we improve the effectiveness of governance? And looking at national priorities, those things have been very clear from Harambe Prosperity Plan, NDP 6. There's always an aspect of governance. There's always an aspect of governance. When you look at pillar number 4 of effective public service delivery, that was supposed to be accelerated to say, at 21st century, we are not supposed to discuss about the basic needs of water, electricity, food, and shelter. We are supposed to discuss about how we can better innovate, how we can better advance, how we can better advance ourselves. But at this juncture, there is still, a lot of things that we need to discuss about the basic needs. And maybe we'll ask a question, simple question to say, looking at the system that we have, looking at the institution that we're supposed to drive priority areas in the economy, and also looking at the funds surrounding these institutions, you may also be tempted to ask a question to say, the basic layman question that anybody can ask, you say, how much money is needed to uplift 2 million people out of poverty? How much money is needed to that? To uplift 2 million out of poverty and create a sustainable system. Maybe we should start the discussion from there. How much money, instead of us moving in a circle to say, how much money is needed to uplift 2 million people out of poverty? These are the people with different needs, people of different ages, people with different interests. But how can we create a sustainable, sustainable system that can uplift these people out of poverty, and they can also invest in the future. Because if we are at this juncture and we are planning about 2040, for example, and we are thinking about social grant in 2050, as we are speaking about it right now, rather than thinking about how can we remove these people out of social grant, then they can stand on their own, then, you know, we are a long way to go where we want to get into. Yeah, because uplifting a person from poverty should be well calculated, maybe from an individual perspective, to say a young person of 30 years old, a young person of 25 years old, educated or not educated, what is the average according to his or her needs? What can be done to uplift this person out of poverty and create a sustainable formula? Sometimes it's not even about money. Sometimes it's even about the education system, what you are putting in the mind of this person, the values, the ethics, and also right knowledge in the mind of this person, economic knowledge. What are you feeding? What is your curriculum feeding children at grade 1 that will make them stronger and economically competitive when they complete grade 12? Or just a system of going in through, if you make it, you make it, if you don't make it, it's out? Is that system very strong enough? Because we must start also from the foundation to say, is that this system strong enough? And also, what is, there's a lot of things. Self-love, pride of your country. Do these people have a duty to say, if you are in grade 2, for example, do you have a duty to say, I'm working hard so that I can improve my community? Do they even love their country? Because we must start from there. Because if we continue moving in a circle, if we continue planning on social grants, things will not work out. We have tried. Things will not work out. But yeah, let us look at Namibia, because today from 7 o'clock there we'll be speaking on venture capital, how much money is spent in Africa, especially to support startups at what industries, and this also going to assist you also to see, especially entrepreneurs, to say between 2014 and 2024, how much money was spent in Africa, and also what startups, what are the investors looking into, and also who is winning, what do the investors want, who is winning between you and investor, and also how can you create that strong collaboration. And the other aspect also that you need to look at, especially when you are going to look at that Africa Investment Landscape report, when you are going to look at that, so what you need to look at is to say, when it's coming to investment, what do you mean when you speak about venture capital, when you speak about investment, what are they looking at? Are they looking at startups? Are they looking at early grown, businesses? And also, how are they winning? How are they making money through investment in those startups? So that is the conversation that we're going to have, particularly from 7. But for now, there's news in economic and bilateral relations between Chinese President Xi Jinping met with Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama on Tuesday on the sideline of Global Leaders Meeting on Women, which is co-hosted with UN Women in Beijing. And they look at expanding and also strengthening bilateral relations, economic relations, and also improving, global governance system. You must be able to understand that Ghana has been at the center of African development, and they produced best leaders that they don't only represent Ghana, but also Africa. But when you look at the ideas and the thinking of the president of Ghana, Dramani Mahama. May also be able to see that in terms of direction, the thinking, and also where he wants to take his country. And also the views about Africa at large, you must be able also to see that Africa still have leaders who can make strong decisions, strong pronunciation among global threats and also among, global challenges. Because I'm always advising people to go and listen to the speech of the president of Ghana in at the United Nations General Assembly. Then you see what he's speaking about, especially when he's speaking about innovation, speaking about research, speaking about the capacity of youth, and also the future of Africa. To say we are not here to beg, but Africa is the future. Then there is no negotiation about that, and the research is proving it. But what you also need to know, you need to understand, is that you might be the future, but if you are not handling what you have well, somebody may come and grab that opportunity, and it's very difficult for you to get that. So let us look at this news, and we are also going to look at the situation, especially to look at Kenya. Because there's an incident also which happened in Kenya there, where a presidential guard, and the presidential guard was killed, was stabbed, and the person just moved across that to the presidential palace or state house of Kenya. Then, stabbed one of the guards, one of those presidential protection unit, and died. It's quite it's a disturbing news, especially, and the man is arrested. But let us start with Ghana and China, and we move to that that news.
Chinese President Xi Jinping on Tuesday met with Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama on the sidelines of the Global Leaders Meeting on Women in Beijing. The encounter came as China and Ghana celebrate 65 years of diplomatic relations. Xi Jinping said the friendship between the two countries has grown stronger over time. Both leaders expressed hope to further develop bilateral relations. The Chinese president called on the two countries to expand cooperation on various fields, including mining, energy, infrastructure construction, agriculture and fisheries. Ghanaian President Mahama thanked China for the support provided to his country through mechanisms like the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation and the Belt and Road Initiative. China is one of Ghana's main trading partners and a major investor. Ghana has secured over $3.9 billion in Chinese foreign direct investment over the past decade, according to the Ghana Investment Promotion Center. Mahama also expressed his commitment to China's new global governance initiative, which it says is designed to build a more equitable global governance system.
One of the callers always been advising to say, when you speak about the future of Africa, the future is with BRICS, the future is with the East. But I also beg to differ, because it's not only about the East or West, it's about how you position yourself, because you cannot move without another. It's where you meet, at what interest. But his argument is also quite proven. Also, when you look at most of the African leaders, looking at shifting their trading with the eastern part of the world, and also looking at new opportunities. Because when you look at, for example, Ghana is it's a major producer of gold. It's a major producer of gold. It also has, diamond, manganese, and lithium. And looking at the development of China, looking at investment of China's business, especially looking at lithium and also other minerals such as gold, must be able to understand that those are strategic partners. And the fact that gold currently, as we are speaking, Gold is leading. Gold is leading. And when you look at the scale that is used to measure gold, it's indicated that, you know, it's hit $4,000 per ounce. And those who understand the scale and measurement of gold, you may be able also to see that that is a historical milestone, especially on international trade. And the countries which are selling gold currently, they are in good hands. They are in good hands. And are we not part of those countries? We are also part of those countries. Look at B2 Gold. Look at what we have. I think we are also part of those countries. And the question that you need to ask is that at what stake do we have? What stake do we have as a government in those you know, mining production? And also, how is Namibian gold also bringing or expanding, and also you know, bringing back something into Namibian pockets? And yeah, moving forward, let us look at what have happened in Kenya when a man just move at the State House of Kenya and stabbed you know, one of the presidential guard, and he was stabbed to death. The man is arrested. And you're asking yourself, is it it's a frustration? Is it a motivated attack? Or the person has another interest? Is the person okay? Or is just an accident? Is it the attempt on the president? Or what really happened? But let us look at this news. And also, you know, move forward.
Is Perimeter War. Thank you much for tuning in. Our sign language tonight is Belinda Phillips and State House Nairobi. A GSU officer stationed at the main entrance was attacked and fatally wounded by an intruder who attempted to force his way into the compound. The assailant, armed with a spear, struck just once outside Gate D, an access point often used by members of the public. And as Franklin Wala now reports, in a separate incident, another GSU officer manning JKA's perimeter wall was strangled to death by a civilian. Two officers from the elite unit have now been killed within 24 hours. Both suspects are in police custody awaiting court proceedings.
A spear, a State House gate, a GSU officer dead in broad daylight, and a man calmly claiming he was sent by Satan. This isn't fiction. It happened at one of the most secure places in Kenya, just meters from where Kenya's President William Ruto was preparing to leave for Konza City. What?
Yeah. Yes, perimeter wall was...
Let us move forward. That is what's happening in Kenya. And, you know, it's quite scary. It's quite scary. It's a civilian killing, you know, GSU officers. And those are well-trained, you know, security personnel and to protect the president of Kenya. They're just moving to State House like that. What to say, is it the external forces? Is it the person has anger with the president? Or what really happened? Is it frustration over unmet expectation? Or the person is not okay in the mind? Or is it, was he really thinking that he was going to win with just a spear? Or just, you know, a very difficult thing, but difficult to interpret. But that is what's happening around the world. That is what is happening around the world. And yeah, you can still engage us, because before we go to the conversation of venture capital, before we go to the conversation of venture capital, because it's quite important also, it's quite very important to look at why are the investors investing in you? What are they investing in and what are they getting? How much are they making? And where is Africa standing in terms of investment, in terms of capital venture? And also, what are the emerging industries that are being invested in, and at what sector most likely to invest, especially when it's coming to startups. So let us pay the bills and move forward.
Do you ever wonder why we have so many road rules? Like, don't jaywalk, don't drink and drive, don't drive with underinflated tires, and don't speed. It's because we don't want you to put your life at risk. Don't become a statistic. Don't become a headline. Be a responsible road user. Do the right thing and save lives.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
There's no price like the ShopRite price. We commit to bring you lower prices on all the essentials you need, like 2 kg Rite brand white or brown sugar for only $38.99 each, and 4 kg Real Good frozen mixed chicken portions for just $189.99. Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 19 October 2025. Only at ShopRite. Catch Ready, Steady, Cook on One Africa. Proudly brought to you by ShopRite Namibia.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism. Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward. We are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. And yeah, just before we go to venture capital in Africa, it's quite also very important also to look at inside again, especially when yesterday Namibia Standard Institution has launched its standardization strategic plan. It has launched its national standardization strategy and plan. And one of the key highlights at that launch is the aim of promoting, quality assurance, and also promoting of quality product that are being sold inside the country and also outside Namibia. And one of the things which have also happened yesterday, it was also a quality assurance awards, where companies were given awards when it comes to either it's the best company which quality products. It's the best company which invested in quality assurance. It's also a best company which is complying with compliance guidelines and also legal instruments, particularly when it's coming to production of products, to say where are you standing. And some of the companies which one, especially when it's coming to quality assurance, award, maybe able also to see that it's a matter of analyzing, and it's also a matter of motivating others also to be part of that quality assurance. But when I was there yesterday, I was also asking myself to say, when this events such as this are happening, where are our SMEs? Where are our SMEs? And I also have questions in my mind to say, when you look at a situation like this happening, is it only for some people who are a bit advanced? Where are the 80% of the people who are involved into business? Where are the informal sector? Because, you know, what is very interesting is that we may like it or we may debate with it, but when you look at the contribution of SMEs to national development, it's almost the same as the contribution of the mining sector. You may think informal sector or SMEs are not, or some SMEs are not that variable, but when you have something like this, I think it's quite very important also for those who are operating smaller businesses to understand and be in line to say, when you are speaking about standard, when you are speaking about quality assurance, what products are being spoken about? What products are being spoken about? And let me say you have a business of selling meat, business of selling beef, pork, mutton, you can name it. There are certain certificates that you must have. Your meat must be tested. It must be of high quality. It must be of high quality. But the question has always been here to say, how are you going to know about this information? And are we really ready to expand? Are we really ready to incorporate those small business owners, those sole traders, those who only employ one person? Are we ready as Namibians to incorporate these people at Africa, continental free trade area? Because this is actually in line with the future of Africa, and also in line with what the nation wants. But what is very interesting is also that, you know, when you look at standardization strategy and plan, you must also be able to realize that almost everything is checked. But is it really everything which go through that test meet a standard, especially when you look at domestic? Because what's supposed to be, because when you look at for get like in America, there's an institution, I think it's called, so that I cannot remember it on top of my mind, but it's called something like drunk test, but it's dealing with almost everything which is coming in the United States of in the United States of America, whether it's devices, whether it's products, whether it's cosmetics, whether it's machines. To say that at what level, you can just go into American market and sell anything. You can't just go into American market and dump everything that you can dump. But when it's coming to Africa, I think it's also something that we must look at and expand on it. Because I was looking at, for example, there is an industry, the cosmetic industry, for example, where you see our beautiful ladies using some of these products. But when you look at the changes that these products are bringing to their bodies and the health impact that they have, you are asking yourself to say, where do you buy this thing which is changing your skin completely? Where do you buy this thing which is changing part of your body's completely? And did it really go through that check, or it went under the table? It went behind, closed doors, because it was supposed to be. Because for you to have a competitive nation in terms of trade, you must have institution in place. And I like it, the fact that they spoke about quality assurance infrastructure. You must have institution in place. You must have businesses in place who understand what does it mean when it means that this is standard. And it's my hope that this institution also go and simplify it to an ordinary person to say, yes, you are in the business of selling food, but at what level, at what standard? Have you ever went to a restaurant anywhere, then realized that, no, the person who made this fat cake or these chips or this, this meal, was the person stressed or not? Is there any standard that these small businesses must meet when it's coming to food? Because if you do not have that standard, You may also end up poisoning your people unintentionally, but you fail because you fail to meet a certain standard. If people are selling kapanda, what quality of meat is this? What quality of meat is this? And this should not only just apply it in towns, because if it's the standard, it must be set at a certain standard level. To say even at the village, when you are selling a certain product, what are some of the things that we have to comply with? And that's the only way that we are going to win. And I hope, and it's my hope that when it comes to the smaller businesses, at least they are included in that, because when you look at where the country is going, and when you also look at African Continental Free Trade Area also, you are speaking about opening up, but where are you standing as a country? Is it only some businesses which are going to compete, or also smaller businesses? So yeah, and there's some words, especially from the Deputy Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy, that is Gaudensia Groene, who launched Namibia Standardization Strategy. And there are things that the Deputy Minister has stated to say, when you look at this strategy, it's a key guiding tool in ensuring quality in key priorities such as manufacturing, mining, forestry, and also fisheries. And she also referenced to say the standardization strategy is in line with NDP6 and should be between regulation, market cooperation, quality standard, and around Namibia to improve its competitiveness when it's come to international trade. Because one of the things that she indicated, that standardization or standard deal with almost everything. The water that we drink, the food that we are eating, the devices that we are using, there must be a certain standard that they meet. They must go through a certain testing, so that at least when it comes to domestic advancement, at least we are not struggling at that level, because they are also going to check us. Namibia has to comply. Namibia has to comply with World Trade Organization. Namibia has to comply with ISO institution. Namibia has to be signatory to those standard institutions for you to compete in, at the global scale. But I was also puzzled, actually. Because there was certain time somebody I was speaking with was saying he got this certificate, and that certificate is called ISO 9001, actually. Then when I come to the discussion with this person, he's saying, no, I made this business of selling this type of fertilizer, but I'm still not allowed due to the fact that I'm still not, even if my standard is this of quality, I can start in Beijing, I can start this fertilizer in UK, in Belgium, the US, SADC region. But when it's coming to Namibian laws, they are still not allowing me to sell inside my own country. Because you know why? Because of dominance within that space, because of some colonial laws, where the Minister of Agriculture will just tell you to say, yes, we are very happy with what you are doing, but there are certain legal instruments that are not complied with, or there are certain legal instruments that are not allowing you to sell in the country. Then you're asking yourself to say, whose country am I living in? This is not the country that my great father fought for. This is not the country that, people died fighting for, so that we can have this freedom of speaking the way we want to speak respectfully, and also interrogating issues. And you're asking yourself, why the system? Why we are always speaking about the system like the system is somewhere? We're always complaining about The system. Why can't we fix the system? If you are traveling from here to Ruderitz and we are always complaining about, oh, the bus is not fast, or the bus is only, is making this sound, the aircon is not working. Why can't we fix the bus instead of changing the driver? Because there are things that the driver does not have control, but there are things that people can have control over to say, no, if the law is oppressing young people, if the law is oppressing businesses, if the law is if the law is not protecting public service employees, private sector employees, and if the law is not protecting NGOs, if the law is against the people, why can't the law be fixed instead of just referencing the system? And there's nothing which make me personally actually angry than somebody who is in a position of power and is telling you, I'm guided by the document, I really want to help you, but the law is saying this. Then you're asking yourself, why can't you go back and advise on that matter? Because that was what was supposed to be done. So, it's 7 o'clock, and we have enough time to engage on the matter of venture capital. But you can still give your input at 083-288-401-083-288-401.
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Hello? Hello?
Yes.
David.
Yes. There's something that you mentioned very important. That strikes my mind.
Okay.
So the issue of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that taxi service delivery.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hindered.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then just because of the bureaucratic issues. So, you know, like some of the law for you, you see, you might want to steal a minister.
Come again?
Or just a permanent secretary.
An ED.
You, and of course, there are formal structures.
Just speak up a little bit because I'm not able to hear you.
Oh, you are not able to.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Is it fine now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Is it fine now?
Yes.
Yeah, I was just trying to narrate on the bureaucratic system or way of doing things that hinder people and frustrate. People like you say, these are true issues, even though there is an open door policy, but people don't respect that. Of course, you need to be more conscious about the...
Do you know that when somebody say I have an open door policy, that is a statement which means that it's very difficult to access me. Most of the people who tell you they have open door policy, they actually lock their door.
So, yes, that's why you know demand accountability, because you mentioned about some of the structure that you put in this Arambe 1 and 2, especially when it comes to governance, good corporate governance and all these things, and he actually coined that thing, open door policy. And he also was accessible to the public.
Yeah.
Through calling the cell phone like the way I'm calling to you now.
Yeah.
So that because you knew that there are bureaucratic issues that really hinder. And sometimes the distractor that you were talking about also taken advantage on that. So you cannot see the permanent secretary. So you have to write and then you have to do this and this and that and that. Some of those things are not unnecessary. I'm not talking to the phone and call the permanent secretary and say, this is the so.
You know, sometimes it's just a decision which was supposed to be made by an administrator, but because of those bureaucratic things to say, you must speak to who so that you can get this approval. Then there is, you know, if I remember there was a time, I don't know what, I went to a certain ministry, then I wanted to, I think it's an ED or something. I think it's an ED, yeah. Then there is a certain form that you need to write. It has to go to be ticked until your message is heard, then you're going to be called back.
Oh my God.
Then when I was speaking to this PA, I said, no, so this is the system, how the system is. No, you know, you are writing your complaint here, and this is a document that you are putting. And there are a lot of, and those who are working in government, they will be able to tell you to say, no, this is a process.
And imagine a process that does not deliver effective service. And then number one, there is no confidentiality in this area. Remember, you need to deal with the issue, like you say, the issue that's supposed to have been dealt by the administrative officer, it has now to go and disturb the whole issues, the whole process. The process should be designed in a very, in an effective way, ordinary manner. And the things, you know, me, I work for the government for a long time. So as a personal officer, administrative officer, imagine that kind of a situation.
Yeah.
So now you need to make sure that some of those bureaucratic things, they need to be done away with because they hinder. I was talking to my colleague and say, this is because of this thing. Tomorrow I'm going to see this young man there, who's a minister, and I'm going to see him. So you know that kind of commitment, and also so that sometimes we reluctantly also just say no, you tell the person, you say, please, I need service.
But I just tell you, no, wait, I'm going to talk to him. What did he say? He will return back to you and all these things. And it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating. Do you know that if you give me a diplomatic answer three times, that will make me angry? Because, you know, and they are professional in dealing with it. No, I'm very sorry, sir, but you know, we understand your matter, and we are just waiting for the chief so the chief can sign. So that after the chief sign, we are going also to speak to the director. And we understand your issue is going to be handled very well. And when you go home, you say, man, I'm still dealing with the same problem which I came with.
Can you see how to reform some of those policies, in the administrative policies, and some of those acts and things like that? But more especially, create more awareness on our obligation, so that at least we can able to sort out those things in a very orderly manner, decent manner, so that we just preserve the order of the society. So that are these bureaucratic things, it's for you people, man. You are on the good side. You are strategically positioning yourself. And this is how we want to position our administration, our everything, the whole system, so that people don't just need the system, the process. That's why the process needs to be speed up without those bureaucratic hindrances.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, that is the discussion, especially when it's coming to bureaucracy, it's coming to assistance. The public sector, the line is very long. The line is still long. The line is still very long. And I think those who are in charge might be able to improve that effectiveness. Sometimes we have really good employees, but getting an answer from you, it takes time. It takes time, need approval. And you also understand that this person also cannot just make a decision because there is a guiding document which is saying, you know, you're supposed to do this and not supposed to do this. And this is the only thing that I'm going to answer. But sometimes you are in Beijing with work, and when you come back, the office is spelled up with a lot of letters. And are you really going to tell me that you're going to address all those letters? And how many of complaints went even without feedback? Not really because people are not able to give feedback, just because it's a lot of work. Some people even give up. Sometimes a person come with a very brilliant idea, just need advice or authorization, but because of the system, and those who and you find those who are connected to say, no, me, I'm not going to deal with a PA, I'm not going to deal with a secretary, I will just call the person directly because I know him. then maybe that can help. But that was not supposed to be the thing, because those who, have been around for quite some time, they don't stand in the line. They call the person directly to say, "No, chief, change that. What you are doing is not correct, or I need something which need to be done, and your process will take forever." But what about an ordinary person who can just come and look for us in any office? And let us pay the bills. Then we can start with venture capital. We're going to look at the African investment landscape, especially when you look at what have been invested in Africa, which countries are leading in terms of that. And also for you to understand, especially when it's coming to venture capital, to say those who are investing in Africa, especially when it's coming to startups, what are they looking at? And also, where is Namibia standing? And I want to make it very clear to say, when FDI, economic intelligence report of 2025 came out, when speaking about Namibia in green investment, or Namibia leading in the field of green investment and also in the field of renewable resources, in the field of energy investment, in terms of FDI being number one in Africa, and also being number two in the world. That is only in that field. But now we are going to look at Africa at large, and we are also going to look at not only FDI, not only in terms of energy, but we're going to look at venture, capital to entrepreneurs in Africa, and to look at what countries are leading in terms of that, what countries are leading, and also what does the investor want from you? How much are they making from you? And what is investor confidence, and what is this report saying about it? So stay tuned. We are coming back shortly.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Chombe. And today we are going to look at the report of, Africa Investment Landscape. And I stated that over the last decades, Africa investment landscape have evolved from being fragmented optimism to a matured capital ecosystem. Then we have venture capital, that is seed-to-seed series, that is those who are investing in startups, smaller businesses. Then you have private equity and infrastructure, and those who are, investing in sectors like logistics, education, and also real assets. Then you have capital mix and risk premium. Now, what is very important, particularly at looking at this investment landscape in Africa, let us look at the global perspective, especially what it has been stated in that report. It is indicated that over the past decade, between 2015 and 2024, Africa attracted 25.4 billion in venture capital. That is 25.4 billion US dollars in venture capital. People are investing in startups. Now, it also stated that but only a fraction of its potential, and with an average of per capita funding of just 1.7 dollars compared to North America. And when you are looking at the graph which is here, although it's a lot of money invested in Africa, Africa is still undercapitalized. It's still the least invested into, particularly when it's coming to venture capital. Then we need to look at who are these invested into.
When life gifts you an unexpected breakdown, take control with Express Credit. No need to panic when you're in the driver's seat of your financial life. Borrow 3,000 to 32,000 Namibian dollars, repayable over 2 to 5 months. Same day approval. Visit www.expresscredit.com.na or call 081-9500-500 for more information. Care that helps you care for others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You'll learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Yes, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at venture capital. And this report has also asked a question to say why venture capital matters in Africa and why does improvement needed, especially when it comes to Africa. Because when you look at when you are comparing with other countries, such as when you are comparing with other continents, actually you look at North America, which is leading, you look at Europe, you look at Asia, you look at Latin America, and you also look at Oceanic. It's indicated that when it's coming to fundings, between 2015 to 2024, we are at 25.4 billion, that is venture capital. And the analyst in the report indicated that for entrepreneurs, the opportunity is real, but funding is not guaranteed. Funders must innovate boldly, operate leanly, and position their venture as Pan-African impact-driven solutions. Because it's one thing to invest in Africa, it's also one very important thing to see what are you investing in and how is your investment going to have an impact on Africa. Because remember, and we have seen greater projects being funded but guided from outside. And this is something that we don't discuss about and we do not really argue to say, okay, you are giving this amount of money, but you want me to spend your money in the certain interest that you want. But I have shortage of water. I have hunger in Omaheke, for example. I have shortage of water in the northern part of Namibia. And I need to tap into my aquifer. But why are you giving me money to support a certain agenda instead of giving me money to do this? Why can't we have negotiators who are based on that to say, no, chief, I understand you. You have good money. But are you really investing in solution of our problems? Because remember, money coming in does not mean that money coming in Namibia doesn't mean that we need to solve our problems, because it depends on the interest where that money is going. Whose interest is that money? And also, how is money going to be distributed to the people? Either in terms of employment, either in terms of investment in what they do, or in terms of the benefit that these people are getting from this. Particularly when it's coming to sustainable solutions. Now, it's also indicated that Africa remains significantly undercapitalized, yet it is a high growth, high upside market in plain sight. And the marginal value of every dollar invested in Africa is greater than anywhere else. That is why a lot of people are looking into Africa. Government and ecosystem builders, the data serve as call to action, because when you are expanding, but you are getting few money, you must be able to understand that when it comes to the aspect of investment, you must also look internal. You must also look internal, not only to look at from outside investors. You must also look at domestic investors, because investors are always not from outside. When you are speaking about investors, it's not only about outside. You also have domestic investors. How do you deal with domestic investors? Now, what are the investors in Africa looking into? And you must be very clear, especially when you speak about technological advancement, when you're speaking about the digital world. You must be very clear and understand that that is the space that we are moving into. Manual is the thing of the past in the world. If you are working on manual, if you are working with the hammer, yes, it might be working for now. But if you are working with a traditional way of doing things without learning what will happen 5 years from now, without understanding the technological part of things, without familiarizing yourself with apps such as Eagle FM app, such as Imba app, such as many other apps, then you are going to lose out more, because this is where the world is going into. Now, it was stated that over the last decades, fintech has taken the lead in capturing around 35% of venture capital, that is backing 933 deals, and 26% of all deals, across the continent. No other sector match the consistency in the investment of fintech. Fintech is financial technology. It's financial technology. It's your digital payment, app. Speak about your digital money. Speak about, your application of payment. Speak about financial apps. That is where the world is going. To say 35% of this is on fintech. What is your understanding on fintech? What can you do when it comes to financial technology? Because although cash is king, and I like cash so much, but I must come to the reality of things to say, cash is only king for now, but it's being dethroned slowly but surely by digital finance, by digital money, because that is where the world is going. Cash has been king for a long time because it allows you to solve few problems anytime, anywhere. Whether there's network or no network, cash can assist you. But due to the risk of losing physical cash, now people are not moving around with money anymore. You'll be surprised. In 2 years to come, you might get into a taxi, and it's already happening. Especially with some younger driver, just scan your card. Just take a card and scan. Sometimes you can do a transaction through the phone. You don't need to carry money anymore. You can go to any shop, you just take your phone and do transaction, and you are done. That is where the world is going. And the report is saying that 35% of the investment, 35% of that 24 billion between 2014 and 2024 is on financial technology. It stated that in 2021 and 2022, the sector exceeded 3 billion in annual funding, with payment infrastructure, neo banks, lending platforms, and also financial solution. That is where you come in. Even micro lenders now, they are moving to that sector. You want a loan? Take your phone. How is your account in terms of digital finance? Do it at home. Do the transaction. You pay it digitally. And You can also be punished digitally. You are just sitting at home and you do all your things at home. Now, the other area is also the investment in energy and climate tech. Climate technology has emerged as one of the most critical sectors for African economic and social transformation. And despite fintech dominating the funding headlines, this sector shows resilience and strategic importance, representing over 30% of the total funding. Now, it's energy and climate tech. And there is quite... And I think these are the information that every young person must get, especially when it's coming to the climate space. It's coming to the climate space in Namibia. There are some young people who are in climate space, and they understand what that means. But there are also those who are in climate space just for the sake of capital. But let us simplify this concept of saying, when you speak about green finance, for example, in Namibia, when you speak about climate finance, what do you mean when you speak about climate finance? Where are those institutions that the young people of Namibia can go and get money and run their project? What budget is there that can assist these young people, this can assist this business, not only young people, but business people, to get money? And who is funding these people? And there is actually there is free money out there, but information are not coming out clearly. Information are not simplified in the language that people understand. How do you explain climate finance in Kwekwe Khwab, in Ochiherero? How do you tell these people that there is money in Namibia on when you have a project on climate finance, when you are doing something on climate finance? I mean, when you are doing something regarding climate change and also energy, there is certain money that you need to get into. How do we explain this to? And how, what is the understanding of climate in the language that we understand? Because when you speak about 30% of venture capital, and it's really sometimes pain me, you only see few young people who are dominating this space. But much can be done. If there is money like that, that money can be used for development, especially a real project which are in line with that objective. I'm not like Trump, who denounced climate completely, but I also understand that environment must be sustained, protected, and when there is money like that, people must get that opportunity and also, I get those funds. Go to banks and ask about the climate finance, green finance. Go to Environmental Investment Fund and discuss about these things. You say, what do you have for young people? Just go now. If you have, interest, especially students of agriculture, environmental science, just go to EIF, Environmental Investment Fund, to say, guys, what do you have on the table? How can you assist us? And also, what are you interested in? Because the report is not lying, and they will be able to explain to you they do not have any option, because you follow. If you have those information, you can go and see how much money you can get out of that. And yeah, it's also stated that between 2023 and 2024, mobility, enterprise tech, education, tech, and logistic had garnered over $600 million, indicating, investor interest in diversification. When you speak about investment in logistics, you understand this logistic app, the in-drive that you have. These are new things, the angles that you have, and many others are new things. But as young people, we must also understand that there is money out there. And we're only getting this information when you get access to data. There is money out there in that sector. If you are in IT and you are developing apps, there are people who are supporting you to that sector. If you are developing an app that make traveling easier, if you are developing an app that is protecting the drivers, then that is where the investment is. Now, The reporter has also stated that looking at these statistics, which investment sector, which investment stage attract the most attention from investors? Because investors cannot just find anyone, but which stage that you find yourself that attract many investors? Let us look at elections.
Democracy thrives through participation, and we all want a thriving democracy, don't we? Let's all contribute to a thriving democracy by being active participants and voting in the upcoming regional council and local authority elections on 26 November 2025. Let's play our part. Get involved. Put your voice in the box.
You heard it yourself from ECN. Let us go and vote on the 26th of November 2025. Let us go and recruit those who we trust to take us through in our constituency and also in our towns. Let us vote. Let us go and vote, leaders. Let us not just complain, be here. Let us go and vote. Because if you vote somebody, you have a right to go to that person to say, no, chief, that is not how I expect you to lead. I voted you to represent us, but now you are busy here dancing here. Please come to order. But if you did not vote, what power do you have? And there is actually something interesting about democracy, because when you see a person complaining, then it's also telling you to say, no, me, I don't, that those are even the reason I don't vote. But you're just asking yourself that, chief, where are you in this world? That is not civilization. You may think your vote is not important. What if nobody voted? How big your complaint is going to be? Do you know how interesting it's going to be if nobody even go and vote? The complaint is going to be big to say, guys, we do not have a leader. But put that person on that chair and hold that person accountable. So let us vote for those who are going to lead our towns. And also, let us also advise those who are coming to power to say, no, the fight which I have seen in a city of Windhoek, for example, or anywhere, or in towns where there is coalition, or in any other towns, guys, please stop this thing and give us what we want. Give us service delivery. If you find yourself at a critical situation, you work with those people because that is what people want. And give people service. Don't enter in these fights. Local authority has been very difficult, ground. And that's why it's always need a strong minister who can deal with other politicians and also technocrats within those local authorities. And at the end of the day, service must be delivered, especially on issues of housing, issues of, housing and safety. Safety must be there. If there is a councillor in Windhoek, in Okahanja, in any other towns that these small kids are being lost without any trace. Imagine you gave birth to a very beautiful daughter, a beautiful or young gentleman, kid just get lost and nobody say anything. Nothing. And everybody's quiet. Who are supposed to protect these people? Those who are in charge must make sure that what they campaign for, safety must be priority number one. Safety and security at an informal sector. How are we going to coordinate those who are in charge of protecting the people? How is your relationship with the law enforcement agencies? And having every day the kid is lost from school, every day somebody, parents are panicking looking for kids. Coordination between, these schools and parents. Now, let us continue with venture capital. Let us continue with that report. And also, looking at this, there is a section 3 of the report. It's also look at which investment stage attract the most attention from investors in Africa. Which investment stage? Because there are stages. And what is very interesting is that somebody cannot just come and invest in you without you starting. They might fund your ideas, but they might fund when you are already moving, because there's an investor's confidence also being there. Because investors are also gamblers. But they are very calculating gamblers. They don't gamble on luck, on wishful thinking. They put money on you. They gamble on you to say, you, when you grow, you expand, you get, I get my money back, I get my name back, and I continue. Now, it is stated that over the last decade, Africa venture investment landscape has shown clear contrast. Early stage deals are numerous, while late stage around secure majority of capital. Now, early stage deals in terms of investment is an investment in an idea, is an investment in a startup. A startup is a very dangerous gambling time where you do not really know that a person is going to succeed or not. But what is stated here is that late stage rounds, it means that those who have already started and those also who are operational, they attract more investment. And remember what I have stated. I spoke about fintech. I spoke about logistics app, Edu app, and many others. I spoke about energy and climate finance. And looking at that sector, you must not be able to understand that what area attract more investors. And the report is indicating that although there are numerous investment in early stage, late stage round secure majority of the capital. Growth stage startup garnered most funding at 7.45 billion from 157 deals, indicating preference for proven business models with clear profitable path. If you have your idea and it's very clear and it can be understood by investors and can show profitability, they can invest in you. It also stated that the seed stage venture thought representing 50% of all transactions with 2,246 deals receive only 3.14 billion, highlights smaller investment and higher risk. Now, the growth stage startups, those who are already growing, they are most likely to get the investors' confidence. That's why there's always a saying to say, if God assists those who are assisting themselves, you must already be found on their way. You must already be found on your way. When you are looking for funding, don't look for funding to start a business. Look for funding to boost that startup. Yeah, and now what is very interesting is that Series A and B rounds with over 9.8 billion raised through 960 deals indicate pivotal phase where startups either grow or falter. And it's indicated that as ecosystem mature, this trend may reflect improved capital efficiency and increase investors' confidence in scalable venture. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at what investment stage attract most of investors, especially those who are in small business, is not the seed stage venture. It's not when you are starting, when you are a seedling, but when you are at the growth stage, that is where investment is coming from. Now, stated that the later stage startup in Africa are gaining investors' trust, while early stage startup remain more experimental, because nobody wants to spend on a white elephant project. Nobody wants to spend on experiment. Nobody wants to spend on the trying, because people also want their money. Now, Now, when we are at this when we are at this document, it's also it's also very important also to look at which countries have attracted more investors, and also what do investors want? What do investors want? Because one must also be able to understand that when it's coming to investors, where are they making their money and how are they making their money? And how did they make their money? So from a short commercial break, we are going to look at how they made their money and also which countries are invested in.
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism. Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yes, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And you can still engage us in the studio at 083-288-401, 083-288-401. We are speaking about, the Venture Capital Report between 2014 and 2024. That was analyzed and presented, especially looking at Africa, to say, where is the opportunity of money? Where is the opportunity of, those smaller businesses? And also, what are the investors looking for? What do they want from you? Now, we were at which countries dominate investors' funding? You have Nigeria. You have South Africa. You have Kenya. You have Egypt and other countries where we are also included. Now, it was stated that when you look at the Big Four, which is these four countries. Nigeria leads with the highest average of funding per capita of 7.3 million, indicating stronger investors' interest. However, its per capita inflow of 2.4 highlights how capital is still thinly spread. Because remember, there is money coming in, there is also money divided. Because money coming in from an investor and how your startups or how your smaller businesses are also benefiting from that. It also must ask questions to say, let us not just celebrate profit being made. Let us celebrate profit being made by the country and equally distributed based on the system which is there, or equally benefiting, although not profit can be equally distributed, but equally benefiting those who are in need. Because remember, when World Bank stated that economic growth in Africa does not mean great improvement in terms of human life, they mean it to say, even though at a certain percentage of a growth of a country's GDP is less changes in human development, is less change in food production, is less change in terms of housing. It's less change in terms of that. Let me say, for argument's sake, 2026, where Bank of Namibia domestic economic outlook indicating that Namibia economy is going to boost. Let me, for argument's sake, let's say the real GDP grow by 8%, for argument's sake. The question can still be asked to say, what does that mean to an ordinary person? What does that mean to an ordinary person? What does it mean to service delivery? What does it mean to housing? What does it mean to water? What does it mean to quality of education to an ordinary person? Because we must connect the numbers to the people. We must connect economic to human development too. So yeah, stated that when you look at South Africa maintain a balanced approach with both metric 5.9 million and $5.9 respectively. That is efficient capital deployment and robust capital market. It, in simple terms, it means that the money coming into investment in South African capital is equally distributed, and also there is a portion of shares, especially from from those smaller businesses. Kenya impressed with an average deal size of 6.5 million and the highest per capita of 6.2, which highlight investors' confidence in effective startup ecosystem. And Kenya has been recorded to have a lead in boosting or in expanding of their entrepreneurs in Kenya are doing quite very well. And it's quite leading, especially in Africa, when it's coming to financial technology, it's coming to payment. One of my friends who was in Kenya indicating that even when you are paying this this motorbike guy who is transporting you, these people they are not dealing with cash. They are just scanning. M-Pesa in operation. And that is a payment system that the world is looking into. And it impressed a lot of people. Look at Ghana also. We used to see this thing on TV in China when people are speaking about digital money. But when it's coming to investment in that sector, maybe Namibia we should also start to look at that space, especially those who did IT, those who did computer science, and also those who are technologically wise. And although everybody must be technologically wise at this, because that is where the world is going, but that is where the that is where the world is going. Other countries feature the highest average funding per deals of 9.8 million, but lower per capita inflow at $1, suggesting fewer larger investment focus on late stage or Pan-African venture. Looking at this sector, it is indicating that although there is money coming into other countries, where Namibia is also included, especially when it's coming to funding of startups, there is actually no really greater interest in early stage, especially smaller businesses, those who are starting. They are on their own until they reach a certain level of growth where somebody can come and say, I think you are doing something, let me give you this 2 million so you can expand. So it means that we still need to work very hard before somebody come either from within or from outside to come and also assist in terms of development. Now, to look at what do investors want? Do you think investor can just give you money and say, no, I'm helping the community? I'm a humanitarian investor. They are doing business also because they also want a return. It stated that, you know, considering that the half of startup fails, 50% of startup fails, if FNB head of, SME development, Mr. De Jong, indicated that, 60% of what SMEs who register their account, they close down in 3 months. It means that there's a lack of operational capacity, and also there's lack of sustainable operation of that business. And in that sector, must be able to understand that investors, they also know that, half of startups, they fail. Investors, they are betting on that. And it also stated that when a successful startup come up, it will also pay for the money lost in those startups that have failed. And this report is indicating that the successful one deliver 10 to 100 times the exit, making up for the losses. Because if a startup is well invested into in Africa, the other succeed 10 to 100 times, then they make up for the other loss, which means that investors, they make more money in successful investment than the money they lose. And at the end of the day, you must understand that an investor is a very careful gambler. It's not just a gambler who can come and play blindly. It's a careful gambler because he's also making money. Don't think that there is something for free in this world. When somebody come and support you, ask, why is this person supporting me? There is always something that you are exchanging with this person. There is always something which is actually good. But you must understand that there is that relationship that you are with this investor. That's why an investor must always be, they must always be treated well as guest, and must be treated as partners, because they are assisting and they are also gaining. And when you understand that there is nothing for free, maybe we can also work hard toward that line, and also come to the point where assistance may already find you on the way, not really to take you from the ground. Now, there's an example which is given here to say in 2016, Y Combinator and a few early backers invested between 120,000 to $1.3 million in Paystack, a young Nigerian fintech company aiming to simplify online payment. By 2020, the Stripe acquired the company for $200 million, delivering up to 150 times a return and 40% IRRs to seed investors. Imagine an investor just come with $1.3 million, then somebody, when you grow up, somebody come and buy that of $200 million, then that is already telling you. In simple terms, investors, they bet on the ideas, and also they make up for the losses through those successful startups. So in simple terms, to simplify the investment landscape report on venture capital, is that Africa, between 2014 to 2024, Africa attracted capital or venture capital of 24 billions, and investors are looking at these areas such as fintech financial technologies leading in terms of investment in Africa. Then number two, you have energy and climate, where here you speak about climate finance, where you speak about project related to environment, project related to, you know, disaster risk management, project related to, you know, environmental management, environmental governance, water, resource management, and all those things. And the other sector which is attracting investment also by this report is that is those tech, you know, tech startups such as educational apps. You can come up with an educational app, those logistic app, the Yango of this world, the other apps of this world, apps such as, you know, educational app, apps such as Imba app, Ingle FM app. Make sure that, you know, when it's coming to that sector, you make sure that, you know, you understand and you look at that direction, especially when you are a young entrepreneur in that field. And the other thing also in terms of investment in Africa is also, you know, logistics. Logistics, because, you know, there is no business that can operate without logistics. Even when you speak about the digital economy, logistics is quite interesting because traveling is always going to be there and will always be there. But although it's going to be a very smart travel, it's no business without logistics. If you invest in logistics, but don't invest in traditional logistics. Because what I'm telling you is that in the next 10 years, if you are into logistics, you must think twice when you're investing in these heavy-duty trucks for a long distance, because people are finding better ways to fasten this process of trade. Look at apps that are making investment, that are making logistics easier. And that is what the report is saying. And the other thing is also that what do investors want? What do investors want? The report is also indicating to us that when it's coming to investors in venture capital, smaller businesses that are starting up, they are still underlooked. So it means that you must reach a certain level so that you can get investors' confidence. And an investor is a very careful gambler, professional one who does not lose. Because if you lose on one SME, the other one will succeed. It can cover up for the other losses. So you can get this report for free. It's the latest report that you can get for free. That is by Leaf Africa. This by Leaf Africa. It's part of Africa Investment Landscape. And you can get through and read it yourself. It's titled Africa Investment Landscape Insight Report. So with this 1 minute, you can still engage us in the studio at 083-288-401-083-288-401, so that you can air your view, can give your opinion, ask your questions, and also come up with constructive criticism, because we are always indicating to you that education comes both ways, and you do not know how much we are learning also from you. It could be that you are an expert in that area. Could be that, you know, somebody who have, you know, experience in that sector, or you are somebody with practical experience in that area. So, do not forget to make sure that when you speak about Wednesday, you speak about your favorite economic paper, that is the Villager newspaper. Do not forget to make sure that you get the time and the luxury of reading and improving when it comes to what is being happening, what is happening in the Namibian economy, what is happening outside the country, and also what is to be done. Because when you look on top of the Villager newspaper for today, you'll be able to see that less than 30% of 2025-2026 capital budget is executed. And when you go deep down and read it, you must also be able to see and also understand that when it's coming to issues of economic and governance, you know, it's coming to issue of EIF inject $1.4 billion into climate resilience by 2026, and these are the things I was talking about. That when you are at that project of climate, then you are good. So, before I take the minutes of Mike, I'm going to leave you in the good hands of Mike Oshoveri to unpack the day. And from me, David Shombe, see you around.